In a scene set aboard the Death Star in Rogue One, actor Peter Cushing appears as Grand Moff Tarkin, a role he originated in 1977's Star Wars.
Prepare for the jump to hyperspace and inform Lord Vader.
Actually, no, he doesn't, because Peter Cushing died in 1994. In Rogue One, he's been digitally resurrected, a miracle of visual effects that pleases some fans and freaks out others. In the weeks since the film opened, the internet has been abuzz about the ethics of digitally recreating actors. While the technology has been around for a while, and it's exciting and whiz-bang, and allows filmmakers a chance to do things they've never been able to do before, the idea of bringing actors back from the dead has some squirming. Sherry Zeck, Associate Dean of the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State University and GLT's culture maven, says, like it or not, this technology is here to stay. And that's a bit scary.
For those of us who like actors and go to the movies for actors, the notion that an actor could be contracted for a single film and their visage or their voice used ad infinitum over someone else's acting in someone else's body. And in the end, this will depress actors' salaries, and it will hurt lower-paid actors before it'll hurt the big stars. We've already seen it with Titanic, where lots and lots of people who might have been hired as extras were not hired as extras because all those little people falling off the ship were CGI'd. So I think it is a risk for the actors' community. I think the actors' unions have to look at this seriously. But of course, as a fan, I was happy to see Peter Cushing in this movie, and I am not looking forward to future Star Wars without Carrie Fisher, so that Disney is already negotiating with Carrie Fisher's estate about how to bring her back in future films. And in terms of marketing and merchandising, is, from a fan's point of view, cool. But for someone who wants to see people who do work compensated for their work, not so much. There are a lot of people out there trying to make a living acting, and the notion that they can be replaced by CGI or animation is disturbing. Now, right now, the processes to do that are incredibly expensive.
But as we all know, tech always becomes more affordable as
it goes
on.
That's right. So right now we're seeing this in big blockbusters, but there will come a time when smaller films will find it more cost effective to animate in some form or another rather than hire real people.
What about public figures? Bill Clinton apparently was not very happy about being digitally inserted into a film that Robert Zemeckis did not too long ago. And of course, we see people like Nixon popped up in Forrest Gump. And this is seen in movies where people like to take somebody who's a public figure and they put them into that as well. Is that a whole different argument with regards to intellectual property?
It's probably a different argument with regards to intellectual property. I believe the general, I'm not an attorney and I don't play one on TV, but I believe the general argument is that when you are a public person like that, an elected official, that your visage is no longer your own. So there's a certain amount of free access to using that. However, my concerns about that sort of thing are very different. It's not about an entertainment value. We are already in this really dangerous time in which people don't believe in the truth, that they confuse facts with opinion, that science is doubted. So living in that era, and then the notion that prominent political figures can be with regularity inserted seamlessly into fictionalized documents or any kind of visual and auditory documents is really terrifying in terms of what people will believe and how that the truth can be so easily manipulated that we come to doubt all visual evidence. We come to doubt all auditory evidence.
Well, if I may reference Jurassic Park and the character that Jeff Goldblum played, who basically said when he found out that they were making these dinosaurs, he says, just because you can, does that mean you should?
Exactly.
And is this disrespectful? I mean, there's part of me that thinks Peter Cushing would have been thrilled to have actually appeared in Rogue One, but he had no family members left. It was his secretary, who knew him very well, who okayed, and she had the rights to his image and said, yes, it's okay for you to do this. But is it respectful for us to do this to long-dead actors? Is it okay to put
Fred Astaire in a commercial for a vacuum cleaner? Is it okay to put Audrey Hepburn in a commercial for chocolate?
Well, it's kind of appalling, really. But you know, I want to be careful and not make categorical statements about the freedom of artists to make things. So I don't want to be too categorical in saying it's a bad idea. But it is something that I think needs to be used cautiously. And I certainly, from my point of view, it is disrespectful. There are a lot of different ways these effects can be achieved. Right now, one of the common ways is to bring in another actor, have that actor do the acting, and then superimpose the virtual face of the dead person or absent person over that.
They
right?
used Guy Henry, a British actor who resembled a bit Peter Cushing for Rogue One.
So here's Guy Henry, who's an actual actor.
And a really good one, too.
And who has a career and has a life as an actor and has invested a lifetime of effort and sacrifice and money in his profession. And his work is obliterated by this technology. I think that it behooves us to think about actors as workers. And how are we devaluing their work? And I don't necessarily in this mean the work of Carrie Fisher or Peter Cushing, but of those actors who are holding those faces, those virtualized faces.
Certainly you feel that we should apply caveats to this. We should be careful with this technology. But what are the pluses about this? Is there something about this technology that has you very excited?
Well, for instance, as you've heard me say before, Gregory Peck is the most handsome man in the history of cinema. And sadly, he left us a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that I could still see a Gregory Peck movie is pretty terrific. So from a fan point of view, it offers exciting possibilities. It also offers real genuine creative possibilities. If we look at the Brad Pitt movie from a few years ago, the Benjamin Button's movie, by the way.
Where he de-ages.
That was not done with makeup. It was done with CGI. It was done with animation. And it was a terrific film. And it was an interesting concept. It was a very effective and affecting movie. So there's a place where the techniques were used for true creative ends, not just a sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, nod to the fans in some way, but it was truly... It was the story. It made the story possible. And so, yes, I think those things are exciting. But I also am concerned in another way as a fan. I know this is supposed to be the part of the interview where I talk about how great it is. But the other concern is that if you look closely at, say, the quick Carrie Fisher moments in Rogue One or the Peter Cushing moment in Rogue One, or let's talk about Tron, the Tron film that came out a couple of years ago.
Where they had Jeff Bridges and they had de-aged him for that.
Right. But if you look closely at those images, you can see flaws. You can see problems.
So we're in Uncanny Valley at that point.
That's right. And the faces are, I mean, it's not like Clutch Cargo, which used to scare me to death.
With the mouths.
When they had the superimposed mouths over the cartoons. Okay, it's not that bad. But I think there is a certain way in which our aesthetic demands are being dumbed down a little bit with this, and that bothers me. If I'm seeing a gazillion-dollar movie and I'm paying $10 to see it, I want to see high aesthetic values. And that's not just in the special effects. I want to see actors who know how to act, who can bring subtlety to a role and nuance to their facial expressions. So far, the technology can't get us that. And notice how mostly, not entirely, but mostly this technology is being used in big blockbuster films where there's a lot of stuff happening on the screen where we are caught up in a narrative that is exciting, not contemplative. So we get caught up in that narrative, and I think we're not watching so much for the subtleties of things. But imagine the first Star Wars. If we hadn't had those little expressions of Harrison Ford, that's what made that character so endearing.
Mm-hmm.
The way he'd roll his eyes or the way he kind of curled up the side of his mouth a little bit. Those kinds of things right now the CGI can't capture. And if you're really watching, you can see that it can't capture it.
You know, part of me, though, gets a little frustrated. And I think to myself, why are we so hidebound about what actor plays what role? Why couldn't they have just recast Tarkin with the actor Guy Henry? Put some makeup on, put a wig on him, put him in the costume. Why can't we just buy that?
That's the thing, we would buy it. Some fans are incredibly grateful for this because that was such an important figure to them, and it helps make the bridge to the original series and all that kind of stuff. But we accepted a change in an absolutely key character in the Harry Potter series.
That's right, Dumbledore.
Yep, and I don't think all Brits look and sound the same. So I think, you know, those of us really know a difference between those. We really saw a difference between those two actors. But the narrative was more important than that. And the quality of both of those actors was so very high. I like both of them. I was invested in both of them as being Dumbledore. So in a way, for Rogue One, there was a whole lot of money and a whole lot of fuss for not much bang, in my view. But then there are other fans out there who just think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and who, I mean, I have to say, I was looking forward to what Princess Leia was going to be in future Star Wars films, and I wanted to see Carrie Fisher doing it. But here's another thing. I wanted to see Carrie Fisher in her 60s doing it. I wanted to see Carrie Fisher with her not-so-good plastic surgery and her rough voice and her crankiness and the weight of time and experience, which adds to a performance, adds to a character. I wanted to see that. I bet you $50, and I don't mean our whole listening audience, I just mean you.
Okay.
I bet you $50 that if they do get the rights to using Carrie Fisher in future movies, she'll be younger, she'll be smoother, she'll be prettier. Prettier in a classic sense. And that's disturbing to me on a whole other level.
That's Sherry Zeck, GLT culture maven. Although the rumor has been circulating that Disney is in negotiations with Carrie Fisher's estate for the rights to use the late actress's image for future Star Wars films, the company denies the report. I'm Laura Kennedy.